Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
Oh, this young man is a sensation! Dele Alli, out of League One, into the Premier League! Oh, what a goal! It's Danny Rose on his Premier League debut!
Sheringham Fleck and Klinsmann is in!
He's got it lost under his feet and it's come from the middle!
Welcome back to another edition of the Internet's most dangerous Tottenham Hotspur podcast. It's Wheeler Dealer Radio. I'm your host, Greg, and I am joined this week by two of our regular panelists. It's Ben Daniels and Reno Wallabout. Guys, we're here to talk about two very, I don't know about very different Spurs games, but very different feeling Spurs games. A 3-2 victory against Bournemouth and a 2-1 loss against Manchester United. I think let's start on the weekend, but I'm sure we'll talk about these games very holistically. I don't know. It was, I don't want to say a tale of two Tottenhams, but certainly I think we got different things out of each of these games. Right, Ben?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know, you know, in the grand scheme of things, how different our lessons were, but yes, the results were certainly different.
Well, I think we did learn very different things. I mean, I think we saw in a lot of ways what's going on with Mourinho at Spurs right now. And that is, I think this guy's stopped the bleeding. I think he is getting results against bad teams in a way that we weren't doing before. He certainly has the team functioning at its sort of barest levels in a way that it had not been for the vast majority of the season against teams that weren't Crystal Palace or Red Star. And I think even against Manchester United, you saw that. I mean, this team didn't fall apart for the entire game. It didn't, like, devolve into a disaster like we'd seen so often. But, you know, it's at the same time, I don't think he's gotten Spurs playing at a real high level yet. And I don't know if it's fair to expect him to have Spurs at a high level yet. I mean, I think we all sort of thought this team's problems were not solely the result of its coach. But, you know, I mean, Manchester United is probably a more talented team than we give them credit for, but they're certainly not a good team. And it would have been nice to sort of pull something out against them today, but we didn't. Because I think Mourinho's gotten a little bit out of this team, but he hasn't gotten a lot.
Yeah, I mean, for me, you know, the lessons kind of start and stop with what is our midfield and how does it function and how does that impact kind of everything that happens around it. And today saw the return of the Harry Winks, Musa Sissoko midfield that has not been good for a really long time. And, you know, for anybody who's watched this team for the past year or so, like, this is not new information. We know they don't play together very well. And when they do, it's like, in very, very limited circumstances. You know, I think our record with them starting this season is one win, and the rest not wins. And it's frustrating because, you know, one of the things that we seemed to see from Mourinho when he came in was a recognition that we needed a little more steel in midfield. And he restored Eric Dier to the side for the last, I think, all three of the last three games that he's been in charge for. And, you know, Dier has definitely had his ups and downs. He hasn't been great. You know, his passing has been pretty wayward. He's not the mobile defensive unit that he used to be. You know, he's clearly rusty and maybe a little injured or something. But
he's a unit, know, maybe more so than he ever was.
Right. He's definitely a unit. He's a large lad. But, like, having his presence there, like, he does break up play well. He does, you know, shepherd counterattacks into less dangerous areas of the pitch rather than letting them, you know, come straight up the gut against us. And, you know, at the first possible opportunity, we have now seen Musa Sissoko and Harry Winks let us down in a way that we're all too familiar with, you know. The last game they started together was the 2-1 loss against Liverpool. And since then, they have not played a midfield together, and we have had 4 wins and 2 draws in all competitions, which is easily the best stretch of our season. And I feel like it doesn't take, you know, a tactical mastermind to recognize that, like, they may be part of the problem. You know, what, regardless of their abilities individually, which I think is, you know, limited, certainly together, they don't complement each other very well. They don't compensate for each other's weaknesses. And, you know, the result was, I wouldn't say a foregone conclusion when we saw the lineup, but I think wildly unsurprising.
I mean, what gets me, Ben, I think you nailed it. It's just, we've seen this. We know what happened. And I understand that he is working on short time with this team. Like, he has not had, like, a significant amount of training time. He needs results. Like I've said before, he needs to stop the bleeding. And I sympathize with a lot of that. And I understand that limits him and us in a lot of ways. But at the same time, like, I don't, like, and he needs to rotate. I get it. We got three games in a week. Like, he needs to rotate. I understand that, too. Surely, I don't care how, like, much Lo Celso needs to be integrated in the team or England or whatever. Like, surely he cannot be worse than what we saw today. I mean, there is no excuse for him not being in this, more involved in this team.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't play very much today, but when he did, we saw, you know, neat passing interplay between him and Ndombele and Christian Eriksen. You know, he only played for like 5-10 minutes, but he didn't look like he was like wildly off the pace or out of his depth. You know, he had a few poor touches and the kind of thing that I think everybody had today. But there was, you know, and we've seen him before. There's been no indication that like Giovanni Lo Celso is like overmatched by playing in the Premier League. Like, that's just clearly not been the case.
You know, so, what? If things were going better, I would understand, like, this guy needs a little bit of time to get on the same page as his teammates. But frankly, what we're doing ain't working, and we got, like, one of the best young midfielders in Europe. Let's get him the fuck in there.
Yeah, I'm very surprised that we're seeing this because, you know, again, like, in Jose's previous three matches in charge, he has almost deliberately steered away from this. I mean, last week, against Bournemouth, you know, we saw a Dier and Ndombele midfield, and Sissoko played on the wing, which we haven't really seen in a while. And Sissoko looked very dangerous. He scored his first goal in God knows how long. And it seemed like an indication that Jose had started to figure out, you know, his personnel a little bit. You know, he had made comments about Sissoko not quite having the skill set that he needed in midfield. And so to see him be restored to that role, I'm confused more than anything.
Rob, what is, from the Jose Mourinho conspiracy news desk, what do you think is going on here?
Well, obviously he's lost the locker room and this is just him lashing out. We're in the final stages of the Jose Mourinho era. It's been a wild roller coaster, but it's clearly reached its end. And, well, the roller coaster is never finished, apparently. And we're just heading right off the edge of it. No, but seriously, what I find strange about this is that Jose Mourinho, king of narrative, picked his return to Old Trafford to just the man who spent a year without a job in football, studying the game, studying Tottenham, becoming a new manager, and picking the midfield that he watched get Pochettino fired. It's very bizarre. If you look at the bench for this game, not including Twitter wildcard Juan Foyth, Danny Rose, Eric Dier, Tanguy Ndombele, Christian Eriksen, and Giovanni Lo Celso could all, or have all, played in Tottenham's midfield and would have been a better choice than what he went with.
And you know what? Like, maybe Foyth isn't fit for it. I mean, that I can believe. Maybe Ndombele is not, like, you know, you don't want to push him too hard in fitness. I understand that. There's still better options than what we saw today.
It's just the worst possible combination, and he chose an away match against United to roll it out. It's very strange, and given my predilection for Jose Mourinho conspiracies, there's clearly something going on.
You think Arsenal did hire him, and that's what's going on here?
Agent Jose is clearly working for someone, and I'm not sure that it's Daniel Levy. That's all I'll say.
So let's take sort of a totality, like a whole view of this, because I think we would all agree that Bournemouth looked a lot better than this. Obviously, Bournemouth sucks, but like this, that game looked a lot better than what we saw today against United. Like, Ben, what has Mourinho gotten right since he's come to Spurs? Let's start there.
I mean, the easy answer is he has unleashed Dele Alli and gotten him back to the form that we all knew and loved from like a year ago.
Do you think that's all Mourinho? Do you think some of that's fitness? Because I think some of it's fitness.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I said last week, you know, he was already on the road back, but in terms of the role he's playing, he is much less burdened by defensive responsibilities. He makes runs past Harry Kane all the time into the box now. You know, he once again scored a great goal. You know, Dele Alli looks very much like a man reborn. And, you know, I don't know how much Jose just got lucky with timing or how much his influence has helped shape this, but, you know, Dele looks very good.
Well, we are playing Dele in his best position, and that's probably not a coincidence.
Right. You know, he has figured out how to make Serge Aurier more of an asset than a liability. again, until today. He has made Davinson Sanchez look not terrible by, you know, giving him, by playing him in a lower block defense. You know, Jan Vertonghen, I don't know if this is a win to put him at left back, but, you know, Danny Rose was definitely very bad, and this is at least something. So I'll give him credit for that. And again, recognizing the need for a guy like Eric Dier, even though he hasn't been a very good Eric Dier, just recognizing the frailties in our midfield that until today were not suited to a Winks and Sissoko partnership. You know, so he's done a lot right, and I just, from all of the things that he's done right in the past three games, which hasn't been perfect, you know, we've conceded two goals a game in each of the last three games, and we've just won by outscoring the other team, but, you know, he has seemed to grasp some fundamental strengths and weaknesses about this side to at least get us scoring goals and winning. And none of that was apparent today. And I'm just very, I'm mostly just confused, but
I mean, do you think this is a product of rotation? Do you think this is a product of, I don't know. Like, was it just like, what worries me the most is I'm really, just given how bad this team has been this year, I'm really worried about how we're going to perform against, you know, better teams. And I know, like I've said earlier, United's not a world beater, but, you know, there are good players on that team. I know this lineup in particular was kind of shitty, and, you know, we probably shouldn't have conceded some of the goals we conceded, but it's still, that. Like, that's a more talented team than I think Mourinho's faced since he got here.
Yeah, I mean, certainly. I mean, West Ham, Bournemouth, and Olympiacos are not as good as Manchester United, especially at Old Trafford. But, you know, in terms of rotation, it's like, we know Kangi Ndombele has fitness issues. He doesn't seem able to go two games in a week. He barely seems able to go 90 minutes. And so, again, if you have a game against Bournemouth at home and a game against Man U away, which game do you play your best midfielder in? I would say you play him against Manchester United. That's just me. You know, you can probably get away with having a little bit of a worse midfield against a team like Bournemouth. But he chose to rotate the other direction, and it's puzzling. You know, I mean, we already talked about Lo Celso. Like, he's a guy. He can play midfield. You know, we haven't really seen him play a lot of midfield for Spurs, but, like, it's something he's done in the past. We know he can do it. Christian Eriksen is a guy who, you know, everyone has given up on and hates, but, you know, he came on half an hour into the Olympiacos match and turned things around. And, you know, so we have seen Jose put faith in him in a situation where, you know, we were pretty desperate and he gave him the keys to the team and it worked. And he didn't feature at all against Bournemouth, so I kind of expected we might see him today. And again, you know, it took I think he was the first guy off the bench. And it's like, if we have that level of faith in him to fix things when it's not working, why are we not trusting him from the get-go? I'm just, some of these personnel lineup choices just don't seem to make a ton of sense.
Rob, what concerns you most? I mean, it's obviously early days, and I'm not sure all of our judgments are going to be fair, but just sitting here, you know, like a week and change, 2 weeks into the Mourinho tenure, what concerns you the most in terms of how he's managed the team?
Now, it all comes with a small sample size caveat, but definitely my biggest concern is what his midfield rotation is going to be going forward. He has said publicly that he thinks that Tanguy Ndombele and Giovanni Lo Celso are good players, and I would hope so, considering the money that Tottenham have spent or are going to spend on them. And these were their like marquee signings, but they're also not, they don't seem to be at the top of his rotation yet, which is bizarre given the alternatives. We also know that Jose Mourinho has a history of being incredibly like weird and petty. And like, he didn't think Paul Pogba was very good at midfield. So there's a non-zero chance that he just like doesn't think Tanguy Ndombele and Giovanni Lo Celso are good at soccer, which would be a problem.
Well, I think we're going to get a real sense for the Lo Celso thing in a month or so, because Betis's CEO gave an interview where he said basically, I think it's something like £7 million or euros or something that we can save if we sign Lo Celso in January as opposed to the summer. And I think Michael Cayley in our writer's room made a great point of, well, we're going to know pretty quick if like Mourinho is talking shit and that Marca article about Lo Celso not being happy here is true, or if that's just bullshit. So we're going to find that out in a hurry, I think, because if we buy him in January, we could probably rest a little bit easier.
Daniel Levy wouldn't have gotten into this deal in the first place and then not taken the like cheap option to pick him up and make it permanent.
Yeah.
So if it doesn't happen, it's a good bet that it's on Mourinho, which to me seems like a poor choice.
Yeah, but unless Lo Celso is like just selling heroin to players, like there's no good reason to not.
Yeah, he could just be an incredibly shitty person or just be like awful in training or so. We have no idea. But just on paper, like Tottenham signed two really good midfielders and still refused to play them. So again, tiny sample, and they've played a lot of games and Mourinho is still working things out. So, you know, there's every chance that this is the last time we see the Winks Sissoko midfield under Mourinho. And I sure hope so, but that's definitely my main concern.
Well, I mean, you hope he learns his lessons. I mean, I think there's uses. I think we all have problems with those players, and I think today you saw sort of anyone who thinks Sissoko is a donkey, like today was the reason why. But like, I think those players do have their virtues, even if we're not as up on them as some of our other Spurs fans.
Yeah, we saw it on Saturday.
Yeah, we did.
I recall there were Tottenham fans in a bar singing a Moussa Sissoko song.
Singing the good Moussa Sissoko song, which is the one about Gareth Bale.
There are many Moussa Sissoko songs.
But my point is these guys have some virtues, but the problem is they do not work together at all, even a little.
No, and for a very obvious reason. Between the two of them, you cannot progress the ball through midfield unless Moussa Sissoko is just running through six players with the ball.
Which he can if it's Bournemouth.
Which he can and has done many times, but it's not a winning strategy. Whereas if you have Eriksen or you have Ndombele or in theory Lo Celso, you at least have this option to progress the ball through midfield and you're not depending on the Toby long ball over the top, which we saw work very well against Bournemouth and not work at all against United.
Yeah, I mean, look, when your midfield is getting outmatched by Scott McTominay and Fred, like, it's time to go back to the drawing board and see what's going on.
That's
wrong
the
here.
Problem. I mean, they're non-existent.
Yeah, I mean, they provide, you know, very little defensive cover, and they don't move the ball well. So, you know, I don't know what the plan was.
Also, somehow Sissoko was still playing his babysit the fullback role, despite supposedly being in
the
midfield. Well, that too, but also, like, he was supposed to be in the middle. So it was kind of a problem. And also, you know, the second goal they conceded against Bournemouth was Moussa Sissoko in the fullback position, and the penalty they conceded today was Moussa Sissoko in the fullback position. So maybe that's not a foolproof tactic either.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how Jose reacts to the penalty. You know, that's the kind of thing that I can't imagine he has a ton of patience for. And I was really expecting Sissoko to be the first man off the pitch because of that. And instead, he didn't come off until the 85th minute. So,
well, I mean, in his heyday, he'd also have a conspiracy concocted about VAR and Ed Woodward and lizards and something. So,
I mean, the thing about Sissoko that I think we're seeing is, I think my suspicion is, I mean, I think we know the guy's sort of a real physical specimen and can just keep running for days. And I think managers fucking love that. And I think they're really, I mean, we'll see. Obviously, I think a lot of what Mourinho is doing right now is driven by necessity as opposed to design. But I think that's why he keeps getting chances, is because, you know, he is, like, you could just run him out there and he will bust his ass. And, yeah, he might be a dumbass, but I agree. I also think Mourinho is typically not a manager who puts up with this kind of thing.
Right. And, you know, in a congested fixture period, you know, Moussa Sissoko is a guy that you can run out three times in a week and know he is going to be running just as much in the 90th minute of game three as he did in the first minute of game one. Like, he does have that kind of engine that, you know, a lot of our better players don't. And, you know, it's a useful thing to have, but it's just, we rely on him just way more than any good team should be relying on a guy as limited as he is.
And I mean, like you said this earlier, Ben, like you can see the way Mourinho is setting the team up. Like, he brings on Dyer. And like, I just don't think Dyer's ever going to be the player he was. I think whatever happened to him health-wise is just really taking a step out of his game. And, you know, I don't, maybe he just needs time and he'll get better. I don't know. But at least with that, you can sort of see the idea of what he thinks this team needs and what they're going for. And I got to say, if we got to make purchases in the summer, like, getting a sturdy defensive midfielder shouldn't be beyond our capabilities.
No. And the thing is, like, look, we've talked a lot about Sissoko, and yes, he gave away the penalty that basically lost us the game. But, you know, again, he was very good against Bournemouth, and for all his limitations, there are clear skills that he brings to the side that, you know, if they're not worth building a team around or incorporating every week, you know, they're valuable. I don't know what the fucking point of Harry Winks is at this stage in our team. Like, he just does nothing very well except pass the ball sideways. And I'm sorry, that's just not remotely enough.
Well, in theory, he's press resistant, but that's sort of fallen apart in recent weeks.
I mean, he doesn't track back well. He doesn't defend in space well. He doesn't, you know, launch counterattacks. He's just a waste of a person.
Well, I know a lot of Spurs fans like him, and I'm sympathetic to that because he came out of our academy. You know, he had, especially when he was first coming up, he did certain things that you thought, like, oh, well, he'll keep developing and this is going to be really good. But, man, like, I don't know how many times this year it feels like it's like he just should have been doing something to keep, you know, to keep the defense, protect the defense, and he's just non-existent. And it's not because he doesn't hustle. It's just, I would assume it's because he doesn't know where to be. I don't know. Some of our listeners would probably accuse us of not doing our research here, but Jesus, it feels like he's just not where he needs to be way too often.
And honestly, like, yes, all of that is true, but, like, the way bigger problem is in our attack. I mean, you know, we conceded 12 shots today, which is not great, but, like, not a ton. You can get through that. I mean, Manny's expected goals, besides the penalty, was 0.7, which is, like, that's manageable. But the problem is our attack also put up 0.7 expected goals, and, like, 80% of that was that magical shot that Dele Alli pulled out of his ass. You know, otherwise, we had 8 shots today, none from particularly good areas. And that's the thing, is you depend on your midfield to build attacks, and we don't have a midfield. And so...
But that's what's so frustrating. We were starting to, you could see something, at least a patchwork midfield built, being built, and I don't understand, like you said, why we seem to abandon it against our best opponent he's played so far.
Yeah, those same attackers on Saturday were linking up and moving and creating a lot against Bournemouth, and suddenly they couldn't do anything. And so it's pretty clear what the cause of that is.
Right. I mean, if you go back to, like, Pochettino's last game in charge was Sheffield United, where we looked stale, flat, uninspired, and, you know, we still managed to take 17 shots, you know. This just doesn't work. And it's not news. And it's frustrating because, you know, the one thing we've said about Pochettino was, hey, or about Jose Mourinho, is that at least it gives us something new to talk about on the podcast, and here we fucking are, rehashing Harry Winks and Musa Sissoko sucks, and, like, we know this. Nothing that we're saying is interesting right now. Like, we all fucking know this, and it's just maddening to watch Jose Mourinho have to learn that lesson firsthand, right, instead of watching any amount of Tottenham matches and learning that through, you know, smart research. And so hopefully, you know, this got it out of his system. He's learned his lesson, and he's like, okay, that's a bad thing. It doesn't work. And we'll never see it again, and, you know, we'll forget we ever had to have this conversation.
Well, but that's the nice thing about this, is at least we're in a situation where we think our manager might learn a lesson from this shit, and not, like, you know, not where we were a few weeks ago, where we knew he wasn't going to learn a lesson from this shit.
Yeah. So, is there anything else we can talk about that isn't those two?
Yeah, but we should talk about, we talked about a few positives early on, but, like, Musa Sissoko, for all the shit we give him about today's game, and which he frankly deserves a lot of, he had a fucking hell of a goal against Bournemouth. That was a really, really good goal. And you could tell how excited the team was for him. I mean, I don't know, the bar we were in was extremely excited for him, right, Rob?
Yeah. There was singing, there was dancing, there was much merriment. Jan Vertonghen accused him of trying to cross it instead of shooting. But, no, it was a really good goal. And it came from him being in that position where he normally isn't.
And when he is, he usually fucks it up.
And that's probably the most difficult scoring chance he's had during his, whatever, 90-something match.
Yeah, think about the chance he fucked up against Liverpool, and think about that he scored on.
Right, it was just, no thinking about it, just do an athletic thing and get the ball into the net, and it was fantastic. And when last we saw him, Musa Sissoko, everything was great.
And then Musa Sissoko happened.
And then Musa Sissoko in midfield happened, and people are upset, but... You know, as the human victory cigar, Musa Sissoko is great. And we kind of thought that Mourinho, and we sort of already went over this, but that he had kind of figured out what he was going to do with Sissoko and how he was going to maximize his strengths. And this ain't it, Chief.
Well, like, even Sissoko's use today, I could forgive a little bit. Like, it's not an ideal setup. And frankly, these are the kind of things Musa Sissoko does. it's more of the pairing with him and Winks. Like, one of them, you got to put one of them on the bench. You can't put them both out there at once.
Yeah, I mean, in his own way, Sissoko is one of the most consistent players in the squad. You know exactly what you're going to get from him, except for the spectacular goal. But in general, you know exactly what he's going to do. He'll run all day. He is really good with the ball, breaking tackles, being very direct. He can't pass. He can't shoot. He normally doesn't shoot, but sometimes he does, and it's usually bad. And that's the Moussa Sissoko experience. And if he's trying to make a tackle in the penalty box or he's pointing at something, disaster.
So let's talk about, I know we were positive for a second there, but I mean, we do have a brand to maintain. Ben Gazzaniga, that was pretty fucking terrible today. I don't know. Like, a year ago, I feel like everyone was talking about, is he better than Lloris? I don't know if he's better than Lloris with, like, an arm that bends the wrong way, but, man, that was, like, I don't know. That first goal he conceded to Rashford today was pretty unforgivable. I know he had a lot of really good saves after that, but for a guy who's, like, sort of shot-stopping is his thing, that was pretty inexcusable, that first goal.
Yeah, it was not pretty. I mean, you know, again, there was so many breakdowns that led to that goal.
Absolutely. But you still should have stopped it. Like,
right, that ball was from a very wide angle. There was only one place it was going to go, was in that near post. But he had it covered. And instead, it went in the back of the net. And yes, he made some other good saves. You know, Rashford was really whacking the shit out of the ball today. And Gazzaniga did well to save some other chances. But, you know, I mean, that's the difference between an elite goalkeeper and a pretty good goalkeeper, is they're going to make that big save that keeps you in the game and probably not make a terrible mistake that puts you in a hole 10 minutes in. And, yeah, it's frustrating.
I mean, I think this is, I've seen some people saying, like, oh, why is he on Spurs? Like, I mean, I think that's a little harsh. Like, this is, I think at the end of the day, Gazzaniga is what you want out of a backup keeper, especially at a team like Spurs. It's just, that's what he is. Like, you don't want this guy to be, like, if he should not be a starter for Spurs. It is less than ideal that he's going to be our starter for, like, 4 months or whatever it's going to end up. Maybe longer. But at the same time, he's probably about as good as you're going to get.
A backup keeper. Yeah, we could have West Ham's backup keeper.
Right.
Like, that dude got replaced.
He's trying to shave points. That wasn't good.
Yeah, no. He's... Largely, he has not been the problem. Which, considering how much of a disaster it looked like it could be when Lloris got hurt, in general, it hasn't been his fault. Most of the times that there have been breakdowns defensively, like, he's been fine. He doesn't control his area very well. His kicking might be better than Hugo's, but it's not great. He's known as being a good shot stopper, and, like, today he was bad at shot stopping.
He did have some good moments, but
it
after he had a really bad moment.
Of all of the players who were kind of shitty today, like, I don't know, Gazzaniga is entitled to a crapper every once in a while because he's largely been fine. And, like, there have been much bigger problems.
That's true. I mean, that was a fucking howler.
Yeah,
I mean,
it was
that
savable.
Was...
Although, in his defense, on the broadcast, they showed a bunch of replays that the ball, like, he bounces right before it gets to him, and he kind of gets a hand to it, but it goes over him.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, he should be in front of that. That's what was so infuriating. Like, it shouldn't matter if it bounced.
He's also a large man.
He's a huge guy. Right, he's a huge guy. There's a no angle. Like, cover your near post, and you can just lay down and cover the rest of the goal. But he doesn't get a pass on that one. Even though he did well elsewhere, which is not what something you can say about, you know, Sissoko and Winks, or even Harry Kane today, honestly. Just to keep talking badly about people.
Was United good?
No. I mean, again, that's the thing.
United didn't make any huge mistakes. That is the difference between us and them today. We made two huge mistakes. They didn't. I mean, I would say they were probably a little bit better than us on average, but, like, we fucked up in a big way twice.
Right, and that was it. Like I said, we both put together 0.7 expected goals, and they won. You know? Like, it was a pretty even game, and they just didn't make mistakes, and we did. But, you know, in terms of, like, what this means or whatever, you know, I'm just to go back to that, playing Man U away is a hard game. Even though they're not, like, the best Man U we've ever seen, you know, this season away from home, we haven't been very good. You know, we beat West Ham away, and that's it. I think that's our only away win of the season.
Hey, we got points away at City.
You know, besides Red Star. Yeah, we fucking stole a point at Man City in, like, ludicrous fashion. You know, we could have beat Leicester were it not for that terrible VAR swing. You know, we drew Arsenal away, but our away form this season is getting our ass beat by Brighton, you know, losing to Liverpool. So, you know, that's what has been the case. So, you know, a narrow loss on the road to Manchester United in the grand scheme of things in this season is still progress, like, which fucking sucks to say. I mean,
it didn't feel like progress that today, after the last couple games, like, we've looked a lot better lately. And
it looked like all of the games we saw under Pochettino. It's from the lineup to a lot of the performance to the result.
I'm not sure it was that bad, but yeah, it looked like a regression.
Right. Which it might not be, and it might just be a blip, and
yeah, you might have gotten it wrong. Frankly, if he learns a lesson from this, good. I mean, I think what was a little annoying about this was, you know, we've been rolling up some points lately, and you look how quickly we climbed up the table, and you look at how the other teams have dropped a little bit. And you're thinking, like, all right, well, if we can just keep this going and really hoover up points over the, like, and we still can, you know, hoover up points over the Christmas period, then we're going to be, like, in really rock-solid shape, you know, to make top four, or at least much better shape. And you just, I don't know, today was just demoralizing to me in terms of both, like, yeah, that felt like 3 points we could have taken, and also just, like, oof, if we're going to keep making these mistakes, we're definitely not making top four. And that's definitely too early to say that.
Well, I mean, I'll say two things. One is, we never looked like we were going to take 3 points today. We looked like maybe we
Oh, I meant going into the match, not during the match. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. But again, top four is, at this point, like, I don't think it is too early to say. Like, we're 9 points behind Chelsea, we're 12 points behind City, we're 15 points behind Leicester, and we're 23 points behind Liverpool. Like, these teams are all just playing at a level that is a lot better than us. And even if we get everything right, you know, yes, if we had won today, we'd only be 6 points behind Chelsea, and maybe we could play pretend a little bit. But, you know, these teams are not, don't look like they're going to be dropping the points necessary to let us back into that race. I mean, the top four teams all look pretty good, and Liverpool looks ridiculously good. So I think we need to manage our expectations a little bit.
You're right.
And
the thing that we really need to think about is, like, you know, everyone's saying, and I agree, I think this is the true statement, Leicester have been just fucking living right this year, and this just can't keep up. And I think that's true. It can't keep up, but it doesn't matter because they got such a huge head start that even if they come back down to earth, it ain't going to matter.
I mean, they have the best goal difference in the league. Like, Leicester and Man City are at 26 goal difference right now. They have 35-4 and only 9 against. Like, even allowing for, like, a massive slice of luck, that's still well ahead of us with our goal difference of two. You know, like, Leicester are a good team with good players. They don't have European football to distract them. They have a good manager in Brendan Rodgers. You know, Jamie Vardy is having a career year. It's like, I would take something pretty catastrophic to have them go into the kind of tailspin that would need, that would let us make up 15 points on them. Again, even assuming we're playing really, really well. The 15 points is a lot of fucking points.
You know, it, like, I think we all know how this season's going to go. We're going to finish in Europa League spot, and then we're going to do what we're going to do over the summer, and we're going to do our level best to qualify for the Champions League next year. And hopefully that all works. But, you know.
I know. I mean, we're just going to win the Champions League this year.
Look, look, what we need, is just a highly banterous trophy run, whether that's in the FA Cup or in the Champions League. Like, we need something that is going to be very funny, and we're not actually, we're actually laughing, and it's not making us mad. Like, that's what we need this year.
We're winning both of those things.
Definitely. Right, so that's a good question. Is, what does a successful season look to you? If we don't win a trophy, are we, and finish fifth, looking like we're a good team again?
If we finish fifth and there's, like, real progress, I think that's what it looks like. If we finish fifth and it looks like we're, you know, there's a plan in place, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I mean, I would like to win a trophy, obviously. Winning the Champions League particularly would be really nice.
Yeah, that would be, that would be delightful, right? Like, you know, it would, just, it would be all right.
If we just won a Champions League, I think I could live with it. You know, and winning the FA Cup, I think, should probably be a priority.
If the only reason we shouldn't,
we're not going to finish top four, unless, like, someone gets massively injured or something on Leicester and Chelsea, and they just totally fall apart. Like, I think we should just resign ourselves to putting together the best form we can in the league, and then giving our all in the FA Cup.
Yep.
But even again, even failing that, you know, we can get a bad draw and play Man City or Liverpool in the next round. After, what do we have, Middlesbrough next? After that. And we can go home early. And, like, shit just happens. But, you know, I guess what I want to see for the season is Spurs to put together form over the rest of the season that, you know, if it weren't for these first 15 games.
Yeah, we would, Champions League, like, level form.
Right. And I think that might also be a bridge too far, honestly. Like, we still have the squad problems that we have. But if we can get there, I will feel really, really good.
If I just want to get out of this season feeling like next year we're heading somewhere. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, I'd like to win a trophy this year. Like, I think unless we are just really on the heels of top four, I think there is no reason to not take the FA Cup extremely seriously. It's just, I don't know. It's like, I don't want to be too harsh on, you know, today was annoying because it seemed to ignore very obvious lessons, but at the same time, like, you know, this guy's not managed his team for very long, and we have had a lot of fixtures, so, you know, he hasn't had a ton of time to work with them, so it's just so hard to see. This is why it sucks changing a manager mid-season. Like, it's very hard to fix things.
It just sucks that one bad loss, bad in terms of, like, it's shitty that we lost this game, and we're suddenly back to playing the, what if we could just get our midfield sorted out and play our good players, things could get better.
Nothing ever changes.
Yeah, it's, it's nothing if not frustrating. But,
well, we just thought we'd be so much better this year, and we thought a lot of the problems we had last year would go away. And instead, they got way worse.
Yeah, and I think, you know, if we should have learned anything from the beginning of this season is that maybe we need to dial back those expectations and realize that we're not that good and we're going to still have to figure shit out.
But I think you look at the hire of Mourinho. I think that's partly the club sending a message. Like, you know, maybe they recognize, like, all right, we got to get rid of, you know, like, next year is going to be a little rough, or at least we're not going to be in the Champions League, but, like, whatever else, I mean, even if Mourinho is a little bit past it and not great and, you know, whatever, I mean, I think that certainly sends a message of the club's ambition right now.
Certainly. I mean, you know, we could have hired Eddie Howe and or brought back Tim Sherwood. I mean, there's a lot of worse things we could have done. The fact that we are willing to pay Pochettino off to the extent that we did and hire a guy and pay him as much as we have, you know, it shows that, like, yeah, they're still trying to take this club to the next level, whether that's because they want to sell us or because they actually are invested in our success. I don't really care at the moment. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely a positive.
I just hope the fact that we're not going to be in the Champions League next year doesn't mean we can't. I don't think that means we can't bolster the squad. I think it just means we're going to have to be a little more creative than we've been. And I hope for our sake that a big reason that Spurs have been as bad at transfers as they've been in recent years, I hope it's because Pochettino is so particular. I don't think that's all of it, though. So,
yeah, I do. Honestly, I think if Enoch are trying to sell the club, that probably bodes pretty well for a lavish transfer window. You know, because if we don't make the Champions League, we're obviously a less attractive asset for somebody to buy. And so putting some resources behind this manager we've just spent an ass load of money to acquire, you know, that's what you want to do if you're trying to get this club in a position that looks attractive to buyers. In a way that if we were if Levy and Enoch were just planning to, you know, continue the gradual growth project of Tottenham Hotspur, you know, I think we'd be more likely to see some of that more measured spending and, you know, penny pinching. So I don't know what my point is, but just trying to look for reasons to be excited, I guess.
Rob, any final thoughts?
Christian Eriksen money to spend in January, so there's that to look forward to.
I'll be interested. I think we're buying somebody in January. I think
we're buying somebody in January. I think for once we can pretty confidently say that.
Yep.
But we're probably also selling several somebodies.
I mean, that's fine too.
They're going to call that a January transfer.
You know, frankly, if
acknowledgement he's actually going to play, sure.
Yeah. Like if it's just a sign that Mourinho is not going to fuck up our transfers, like I'll take it.
If that's all our January business, are you happy?
No, they need to do. Like if I were Spurs, like I would be bawling out for a defensive midfielder. I think that's something that they could find. I think that's something they could get, and I think that would make a comfortable amount of difference in the team right away. Excuse me. I think we could also, you know, I mean, fullback. There's a lot of needs, and they should at least be trying to solve one of them, even if they can't solve all of them.
Yeah, I'm pretty skeptical that we're going to. I mean, the reality is, again, our goals this season are not very high, and the market is just not very good in January. So unless something falls into our lap, I think I'd be very surprised that we do any business other than maybe sell Eriksen.
Well, we're going to find out. Rob, any final thoughts?
The Moussa Sissoko trilogy concludes on Saturday. We'll see what he does.
What is the conclusion? He plays in goal, gets sent off. What's that look like?
Well,
starts a fight with the other team.
The classic 3-part arc to any good story means that this is the climax to the story and the redemption. So, he's either gonna score multiple goals or play in goal after somebody gets a red card and save the day against Burnley.
Yeah, I think, you know, if you look at it against Bournemouth, that was his discovering his Jedi powers, and then this week was Empire Strikes Back, things that end on a low point. And tomorrow, or this weekend, he has to confront his father and turn him to the light side. And I think...
Does that mean that getting sold back into France or something, or?
You know, we'll retcon it after it happens.
Okay, sure. I feel good about that.
There'll be a wedding. Somebody unfortunately is going to die, but
Well, could it be Christian Eriksen?
Ewoks will probably be involved somehow.
If only. Rob, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me tweeting about the pending sale of the New York Mets at Reno Wallabout.
Ben, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at ComradeUSpurs, desperately cobbling together various memes as I try and express the madness that is Tottenham Hotspur.
And you can find me crying softly in the corner at SkipJack0079. For Ben, for Rob, and of course for Reno, for not Reno Wallabout, he's here, for Brett Rainbow, I've been your host. Come on, you Spurs. Oh, yeah, also leave us a 5-star review.